Hello, loyal listeners. Hello, loyal viewers. Hello, everyone all over the internet. This is the Brass Band Cast. It's the podcast about love, life, laughter, music, rehearsals, musical directors playing solos, bagpipes, tubas, concert bands, brass bands, and marching. Robin, how are you?
I am good. I am very well, unlike you, Tim, who is sick.
I am a bit sick. But I said, Robin, I feel a bit sick and my voice isn't great. Can we postpone tonight's podcast? And
I
Robin
said,
no, we have to.
I mean.
And we're joined tonight by Adrian Alloon. Adrian, how are you?
Hey, Tim. Yeah, pretty good. What? Pretty good down here in sunny Tassie.
Sunny Tassie.
a big welcome to you. Hi, Robin.
Hello.
And a big
nice
shout out to
meet you again.
Mum.
Oh, my mum will be so excited for the shout out. Can you give a shout out to Robin's mum as well?
Hi, Robin's
mum. My
mum
doesn't listen to the podcast. She doesn't listen to the podcast. She keeps asking me questions about my life. I'm like, if you want to know, just listen to my podcast and have time to talk to you. Is that rude that I'm a terrible daughter? Yes. Yay. So we're here. We're changing our format again. Last week, I don't know if it worked or not. Yeah, my weird app. But it's good to try new things, isn't it? Now we're live streaming on YouTube or something.
I think so. This is just behind the scenes stuff, live streaming to YouTube. It's fun.
The final
podcast is going to be very edited, isn't it, Robin?
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe. It might get less and less edited as I run out of steam. No, I spend a bit of time editing it. It's great. I wish I could edit my life and take out all the stupid stuff I say before I let people listen to me. Wouldn't that be amazing?
The beauty of the Brass Band Cast. Isn't that great?
Oh,
have you done anything interesting or fun in the last couple of days since we've last podcasted?
No, not really. Oh, we had a rehearsal back from Nationals. That was fun. Lots of people back. I had a committee meeting. Committee meetings are fun. If you're not on your committee, guys, you should go on your committee. It's very nice to be on committee because you find out all the interesting things and you get to help do things. So we're having our big discussion about how Nationals went and what we'll do next year. Like, will we stay in Bendigo? Will we drive? Will we get minibuses? Will we stay everywhere? Will we book a hotel? We didn't decide anything. It's too confusing. We just talked about it. So that was fun. How about you? What have you been doing in the last 3 days, Tim?
Just recovering from my illness.
Now
here I am, ready to podcast.
You went a bit wild and everyone's recovering. Everyone's got it. It's going around. Did you get a flu vaccine? You should have got the flu vaccine.
No, I should have not.
Well,
Adrian, have you done anything great in the last little while, Adrian? What's up with you?
All right. Well, I guess, you know, depressurizing from the Nationals, coming back down from orbit, as I think we all have that post Nationals crash. I think, you know, reality comes barging in and, you know, work and all those other the things that aren't necessarily life affirming, shall we say. So it's like it's that really intense thing. You go to a Nationals and then it's like everything and everyone all at once, and then there's nothing.
everything you've been putting off while you get in the lead up to the Nationals, because you've got all the rehearsals, all the organizing. You're like, I'll do that after Nationals. Nationals finishes, then you have to do it all.
All the laundry. I still haven't washed the possum poo out of my black shirt. I still have
the possum,
that.
The possum wee poo?
Yeah, it's probably ruined now.
Yeah, I heard about the possum wee poo.
Sitting in a bucket. Yeah, that's the post-national stuff.
High quality stuff, the Burundara uniform.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, it wasn't my Burundara shirt. It was my my silky one. Yeah, no. Yeah. The Burundara shirt could have just got in the washing machine, but this was a nice shirt. It got the wee poo anyway. But yeah, so that's been life.
And so, Adrian, I'd love to, for people who might not know who you are, would you like to describe what your current position is in terms of the National Bands Council of Australia?
Right. Okay.
What do you do?
So I'm the vice president of the NBCA, which sounds really important, or, you know, that there's all kinds of direction that I would necessarily be leading people, but by nature of the NVCA, I'm essentially a referee. I think that's in the nicest possible sense of the word, because you know the power of the NVCA is with each delegate from each state, and that's where the rules come from. So I'm probably moderator / mediator, and as time goes on, I'm probably a little bit of a sounding board too. So that's probably the more procedural side of things. And I guess then it sort of comes into its own when we get to a nationals, because we assume certain duties, of course, just to make sure that everything's ticking over and things are being adhered to. But probably the more fun aspect of my involvement in the NVCA is unofficial historian and webmaster. So I get to do sort of cool Ooh. Things there, like resurrect the NVCA site after it fell over a couple of years ago, and no sooner fixed that and it fell over again. So that's a constant battle, which is always fun. But historically speaking, so you know, the NVCA came into being in its current form in 1934, when it was the Australian Bound Council. And for obvious reasons, that acronym wasn't going to stick for very long, because ABC. We already had an ABC. So in about 1968, that changed to the NVCA. But it took a good 30 years just to get representatives from the state governing bodies for banning to essentially be in the same room and agree to what looked like a national set of contesting rules. Because, you know, there'd been, let's say, quote-unquote, national contests before that, but they were usually under the auspices of whoever the host body was. So if you had a contest in New South Wales, it was run under New South Wales rules, et cetera. So there was a lot of compromise before and after formation of the NVCA. And I think that for a body which is sort of notoriously, like anything that's passionate, you know, it's going to be unstable at times. It's going to want to move in six different directions at once sometimes. And it's like finding that happy medium whereby you can still forge ahead and, you know, go to the pub afterwards. You know, it's so having the respect, you know, the healthy respect to agree or to disagree, to put your case, but it's nothing's ever done without passion. And I think that that's something that can be lost, I think. But
so yeah, you're a busy person, sort of being a bit of a custodian of a lot of what goes on at a nationals, I guess, and being that sort of referee in the background.
Yeah, we can be the wearer of many hats, but basically the general credo is, if you're at a nationals, it doesn't really matter what you're doing or what your position is. It's kind of like, okay, we just get in there and we volunteer. We're just volunteers like everybody else, basically, making sure that things just get done for the bandies. You know, basically that's it.
No,
Adrian, I would love to know, how did this happen for you? When did you first walk into a community band room and pick up an instrument and play some music? And how did that lead to where you are right now? Can we go right back in time? What was your very first band rehearsal you remember attending?
Okay. So there's a great story behind this. In fact, it's very timely, this podcast, because I've just celebrated 40 years, my 40th anniversary of
40th band birthday.
Yay! Yay. Happy band birthday.
Does that make me old? I don't feel old. I was not young when I started. Yeah. Extremely.
Absolutely.
And that's that great story that I think probably a lot of bandies around the country have had, whereby I was in primary school and the teacher said, we're having a visit from a couple of people from the local band, and they came along and played their instruments, and basically we're on a recruitment drive and said, hey, who wants to join the band? And it's like every kid in the class put their hand up. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, we want to do that. So, you know, come along to the local band rooms Wednesday night, you know, we'll hit you out with instruments. And of all that excitement, there were probably five, I think, that actually, you know, took it up from my class. So we got sent out to the back room, which was, and this is the La Trobe Federal Band in Tasmania. Mm-hmm. So this is the, which will be celebrating its 150th anniversary last year, after discovering through a publication of a history book that they weren't as old as they thought they were.
Well, that's good. Younger than you thought. That's always a bonus in life, I think.
Yeah, it's always nice, you know, but sort of what had been sort of as part of local law was the band was formed in 1872, and that was there emblazoned on the jackets and on signage and everything, and basically it just became part of the local law. But of course, when you didn't have access to the historical resources as easily as we do now, it was a bit of probably a bit of a guesstimate. You know, it wasn't too far off, but it couldn't really be backed up. So it was only through the course of the research that's been done into this book that we discovered some hard evidence that it wasn't 1872, that it was in fact formed in 1875.
But hold on, Adrian. Oh. Wait a second. I want to know. You went to this first rehearsal. You were kitted out. Do you remember what you played at that rehearsal? Do you remember anything about actually?
Going off on tangents here. Anyway, so okay, I was given this euphonium full of holes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was kind of like, well, I don't think this weedy little kid is going to, you know, necessarily make it. Give him that thing over there. Maybe he'll go away.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. So I suffered through, I don't know, probably a month trying to get a scale out of this thing and trying my darndest. And of course, I didn't naturally think that the instrument was at fault. It's me. I can't know. Until someone pointed out when it was sort of one-on-one situation. It's like, oh, we probably shouldn't give you that. There's a huge hole in the bell of that, and you know, it's amazing you're getting a sound out of it all. But I said, yeah, but it's okay. I've worked out if I put my thumb here and play it a little bit like a recorder, you know, the air will go through. So, you know, I can still reduce the cool down above and beyond. So that was pretty good for an eight-year-old. It was like, you know, I'm going to make this work, you know.
Absolutely. The problem isn't you, it's the instrument. That's words everyone loves to hear, I think. Yeah.
So that was spirited away, the euphonium, never to be seen again, and I was given a tenor horn. So then all of a sudden it's this, hey, this is much smaller, and you hold it like this, my teacher said, you know, it's like, you know, you hold it like your girlfriend. Oh, you're probably a bit young for that. Oh, okay. Anyhow. So next thing, I'm playing tenor horn, and, it just took off. All of a sudden it just made perfect sense. Like, you know, sitting down in front of a piano to some people, that just makes sense and generally makes sense. I didn't have to put my thumb over anything that, you know, that shouldn't have been, I shouldn't have to. So that's how it was for 12 months out in this horrible room, which was basically an old storeroom under a grandstand, which is where the band rooms are, which wasn't lined or anything, and we'd suffer through winter, you know, we see
so tough, them. So
they, you know, 40 years ago,
the instrument, no insulation.
Back in those days, no air conditioning.
And in the other room, we could hear what was the junior band, and that was what we were aspiring to be part of. And one by one, as we hit a certain mark, we would leave the room and go and join the, you know, the band with the big kids. And, you know, eventually the time came and went out there and was part of the junior band. And if there's anyone in South Australia who's listening, my first conductor was the great Kerry Hewitt, who now plays with Unley. And I caught up with Kerry at the Nationals, and I saw him last year at Newcastle as well after many years of not seeing him. And it's just great that he's still about, and he eventually remembered who I was. To cut a long story short, I then had a few years in the junior band, and eventually he got asked to join the senior band. And my mum was so proud of me joining the senior band when I was 13 that she rushed out and bought this brand new Jupiter tenor horn. Oh, the finest quality.
Jupiter.
Beautiful, shiny thing. And I played that for, I don't know, 6 months or thereabouts, and then I was taken aside in band practice one night by the conductor and said, we really need a flugel player.
Oh.
I know you've got this new instrument and everything, but
don't worry about that instrument.
Hey, this, and, you know, If I circle back to the very beginning, I was the very first instrument I was given was a cornet, and there's no way I could get a sound out of it all. So I was like, okay, here's a euphonium. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's full of holes. Here's a tenor horn. Okay, now we're going to get you to play flugel. And talk about a baptism of fire. First rehearsal. So I've gone from, I'm still, 13, not quite 14, and I was given the flugel. It's like, okay, you'll be fine. You'll work it out. You know, And I think about the third or the fourth piece in that we were rehearsing that night happened to be Flugel Solo, The Shadow of Your Smile. And if you're familiar with the arrangement, it's got, you know, beautiful introduction, the band's setting this nice, you know, Begin type tempo, and then, you know, there's this big setup, big break, and then there's the Flugel's got to come in, you know.
Here we go. Da-da-da,
yeah. You know. And
it's your time.
That's a bit mean of them to make you do that.
Yeah, it was cruel. It was, but it's like, hey, you know, in the deep end, you'll be fine. And what came out was, well, to quote the great Eddie Izzard, I sounded like a foghorn being dragged through where a foghorn should never be dragged. It was horrible.
But did that stop you in the moment? Did that stop you in the moment?
Yeah. Isn't that? Oh, no. It's like, you know, this ascending buzzing sound that went nowhere, and then it was kind of like we went and struggled on for another couple of bars, and the conductor said, okay, probably a bit early, you know, this is a bit early on in your journey. I think we should probably just leave that for now.
And so after that experience of moving to Flugel and having that debut solo performance, were you inspired to keep coming back to bands? Obviously you were. Yeah. What was it that made you want to keep going back?
Yeah, I mean, it really was the camaraderie. I mean, the fact that, and this is banding at the time when, you know, you'd have a smoko and it was a smoko. Like, you know, it was all of these middle-aged men who would basically go off and have a smoke. And so it was like total immersion in a culture that felt very paternal. It felt very protective. It did feel like you were part of something that was a little bit illicit almost, if you like. You know, it was a very adult world. And so the allure was not only the music, because I certainly desperately wanted to play an instrument, but there was sort of the illusion of being exposed to, or being allowed to be exposed to, a very adult world. You know, everything from being sworn at in Dutch by an elderly Dutchman who used to play euphonium through to,
I didn't feel like the answer to the question was going to go there. The reason I wanted to come back was because I was sworn at by an elderly Dutch person.
Exactly. So it's all part of the tapestry. And next thing you're doing gigs. You know, you're in the band 5 minutes, yep. and next thing you know, hey, it's Anzac Day. And then, of course, Anzac Day was just this whole other thing, because, you know, we used to do three services that involved getting on a bus and going to other towns and doing a street march. And then it would culminate in having a cooked lunch at the RSL and doing a concert. So, you know, it's mind totally blown when you're 13. You know, you're basically on tour. You've been there 5 minutes and you're out gigging. You know, much like the joke of the bass player that can learn two notes and you know, he doesn't go back to learn the third one.
Was Anzac Day your first gig?
Yeah, it was.
It was.
So, you know, it would have been February of that year that I joined the senior band. On Flugel? Yeah, I was on Flugel. Yep. Yeah, and next thing you know, it's like,
next question. And did you get much practice before you marched, or suddenly you found yourself walking with the flugelhorn?
I was walking with the flugelhorn. That was it. It was like, okay, you stand here, you keep in line, and by the way, you have to play as well. Okay, cool. Yeah. Total immersion, thrown in the deep end. The good old days.
Oh, we still do that. Do chuck people in the deep end. It's the best way to learn. So,
sink or swim, you know. And
after
a couple of years, I'd start playing in the local comps. I'd be in doing solos. And then through necessity, after 6 years of Flugel, it was like, right, well, now we need a solo corner player. I found myself back at corner and I was like, oh, okay. and that's been pretty much it. You know, I've been corner for the last 30 years now. I mean, okay, I'm on a bit of a sabbatical at the moment. There's been all kinds of thing, you know, bumps in the road of recent times. But yeah, I'm still technically a corner player. So yeah, it's
but also technically a euphonium player, if anyone's got a leaky euphonium out there. Like,
yeah, I can only play the leaky euphonium, though. I should point
exactly
that out.
Exactly. You know. Half recorder, half euphonium.
Yeah, with a thumb.
Musical.
Oh, how fun. And then so you've been playing in bands for a long time, and then somehow someone roped you into the NCBA.
NBCA.
I'm the voice of the people.
the voice of the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't know much about the Nancy the blah, blah, blah. You go.
You go.
So I guess that the admin-y side of things has always been part of my banding life too, because I think I'd probably been in the band for 2 years and I became the librarian. So it was like, yeah, okay. Let me organize your library for you, you know. So yeah. And then of course there was committees and all that kind of thing. So it really was sort of total immersion in not just playing but in running and organizing stuff. So it necessarily followed that, okay, well, the admin side of things was just as strong, I guess, you know, for me all the way through. So I've always had some sort of a role, whether it's been librarian or on the committee or whatever. So, taking on being the secretary of the TBL and being on the MAB, and it all sort of just one thing leads to another, next thing you know, or the next logical step is you should go and, you know, be part of NBCA.
Yeah.
Just one thing led to another.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Careful, those leaky euphonium, they can lead you anywhere.
You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. Okay.
And now, so people would most know you from the guy that reads out the scores, right? So you go on the stage and you read out all the scores. I'm talking for the voice of the people. People are like, I don't understand what this guy does. But do you do that every nationals? It's most nationals you do that, right? Or not?
Most nationals, and it's generally because I'm the number cruncher who's, you know, back there entering all the stuff and doing the posting on Facebook of the results and all that kind of thing. So it's like, okay, well, you've done the work, you read them out, you do it, and it sort of walks that fine line of, you know, it not being a stand-up routine. Because you know people want the results, but I've been to too many nationals in the past where it's like, oh, come on, let's just, you know, get the numbers out there, and you know, or it's, can we have that again? Didn't quite catch that. So I think, well, if you're going to do it, let's just have a bit of fun. Let's keep it light. And there just 100%. Seemed to be a bit of a,
that's why we want to we want to do some results entertainment. Tim and I believe there should be more results entertainment before results.
Right. Entertainment before results.
That's definitely something that's come to being when there was always that long period of waiting, you know, the waiting between getting the results off the adjudicator, doing the processing, you know, printing the certificates, you know, not necessarily using computers. It was all handwritten. And so
printing press out.
And with the calculators, what if you like press an extra zero and one band wins by 10,000 points?
Yeah.
You have some
So a lot of that's been silly. A lot of that's been streamlined now, of course, because you know it's just easy to have things ready to go. So I'm probably taking away some of the build up, the slow hand clapping, and the mock marching displays that we've had on stage.
It does seem quite efficient, but I feel like there could still be space in all of it. There could be still space for like a high note competition or within the reality TV show of, you know, Bandy Wants a Partner. There's options out there.
Bandy wants another Bandy. We haven't said all the names.
No, we haven't.
Lady or man, it could be any. But I really like the way you read the scores. It is very exciting.
Do you think we've gone too far, though? Should we be putting a bit more room in there now? You know, should it be a bit more fun?
Well, I feel like that. I sometimes wonder if we could stage like a days of your band sort of, you know, afternoon TV drama episode.
Yeah, a video montage. Like,
what results?
Filmed in advance.
These results? Because I how much time is a right amount of time for the last band to play, everyone to come in and get together, have that camaraderie and patience in the hall, be entertained by someone playing a very high note or a...
They always need to bring out a table. There's always a little table.
There's always a table.
On it. Yeah.
Oh, they have to bring out a table. Adrian, are you responsible for the trophies or is that someone else's job?
Well, that's technically the executive officer of the NBCA.
That's
of course,
someone else.
Megan.
Someone else. You read the scores. So you look after your bit.
That's my bit. I mean, just getting all of the silverware back, you know, in the one room from all around the country is, that's an undertaking. in itself, really, you know.
I think I saw a photo.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I think my favorite, I guess, is like, you know, where's the fireman's helmet? You know, is it here? When you start hearing rumors, you know, it's been seen at the airport. Someone's got it. It's landed. It's in a hotel room somewhere. It's here. It's in the city, you know. It's like tracking Santa Claus or something. It's like, you know, he's getting closer. And so then it eventually turns up. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it is here. Awesome. Yeah, not
do
all
they,
trophies.
Do they pre-polish it before they bring it back? Or do you polish it?
No.
Who polishes the fireman's helmet? Looked shiny in that last photo I've seen of it.
Yeah, well, we had a bit of a polishing session in between.
This is the goss we need, the polishing session. So you grab a whole lot of the executive, the NBCBA thing. You all sit around with your silvo and your little rags and you polish the fireman's helmet.
Yeah, someone went out and bought a bottle of Brasso, and then we got some nice polishing cloths from the trade stand, and we're just there going, well, you know, let's see what we can do here. Let's you know, just get these all tidied up. And yeah, there was a bit of that going on, but it's kind of like, well, we can't present these. What are we going to do?
Fans bring them back. They've all kissed it too many times. I think we drank out of the B grade trophy once. I hope we watched it before we gave it back. I'm sure many bands have.
I have a question. I saw on Facebook that the winner of the Champion of Champions, Kevin Hickman from New Zealand, I saw him with a photo of the Champion of Champions trophy, and I think he was in New Zealand with it. Do Australians, do we allow trophies for our competition to go back to the winner's country if they're from not Australia?
Because I was at
the New Zealand Pipe Band Championships, and because I love bagpipes, and a band won like the grade 3 section, which is like C grade, and that band was from Melbourne, and they got the trophy, and they could have the trophy for about 30 minutes after the results. Then they were immediately had to give the trophy back. They weren't allowed to take the trophy home with them.
Oh no. Oh, that's like
so those pipe bands have strict rules. Yeah.
There's drama in the past there somewhere.
That's like Hard Quiz. Everybody pays for the big brass mug, but you don't get to.
Yeah, exactly. No, you just sort of leave it there. It's not even brass.
It's not even brass. No. But no, the silverware is allowed to travel and has done.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. And comes back.
And yeah,
you
I
have
mean,
to send it what, back on a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always turned up and it's. Yeah, the our big brass mug, our helmet's 50 years old now.
You're a historian. Why is it a fireman's helmet? Is that weird? Like I've never wondered.
I do. Yeah, it's a donation from the Melbourne Fire Brigade Band. When they, I'm not sure if they folded, they amalgamated, but they basically donated the fireman's helmet in 1973. And that's when it became the trophy.
So it used to be an actual helmet, but how did they make it silver?
Yeah.
Oh, it's been plated. They plated a real helmet with silver.
And it's from Melbourne. So there you go.
Who had an idea? Let's make the trophy a fireman's helmet. Isn't that kind of?
That's cool. That's super cool.
I want to find out who made that idea. Like it's awesome. Yeah. It's better than a boring normal trophy, right?
I think that
was the trophy before that.
I don't know. In fact, I don't know if they were necessarily perpetual. I think they were just, you know, and this is what we're playing for this year. Trophies that have gone by the wayside. Mm-hmm. But I think it was the VBL that had, and I'm sure someone can correct me here, but did you play for a clock? Wasn't there a clock was one of the trophies?
That
does sound familiar. Yeah, maybe in Victoria we just have a weird trophy thing.
Yeah.
I think there is a clock. I don't know. I probably haven't won it enough to know.
Won it enough. I've wanted a beer, but not enough. Good on your oven.
Enough ever? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is there ever enough winning of trophies, though, Robin? I haven't won enough.
Well, not the ones you have to give back.
Like, you should get to keep one and one to give back. We've got a trophy cabinet. We hear trivia about Burundara Brass. We share a band room with Glenferrie Brass, and we each get a trophy cabinet. And their trophy cabinet's way more interesting than ours. We just haven't been bothered putting trophies in it. But, like, the trophies we get, we have to give back, and then there's nothing to put in the cabinet. Yeah. But I think you sometimes get a trophy to keep, don't you? Do you?
In some competitions, right. You definitely get a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you get, like this year, little plaques went out as well because, you know, yeah. All those, the winners of the perpetual trophies. It's like you've got to have a little keepsake. You've got to have something that you can say, yeah.
They're not as impressive as the big trophy, though.
You got to give that back. Yeah. I suppose it would cost the poor competition a lot of money if they have to make beautiful gold trophies every year, didn't they? And not plastic ones. We've got to be practical here, guys. I'm just airing my thoughts. Yeah.
Can I just make a little public service announcement? If anyone does win the B grade trophy, probably shouldn't drink out of it.
No.
I'll just leave it there. But yeah,
thinking it had this like metallic-y thing.
It was a bit brasso-y or something. And
it was a bit brasso-y. Probably had cobwebs in the middle. That's a good. Yeah. They've taken it back to New Zealand this year.
Did the New Zealand band won B grade? Did they take it to New Zealand? Did you see them? Everyone's looking at me blank.
We'll find out.
We had better warn them not to drink from the B grade trophy. Probably more sensible people just would know that and don't have to be warned. Do you think?
But yeah, when it's the
New Zealanders are very sensible. Moment. It was really great to have the Marlborough district that came
Marlborough.
Over.
Yeah.
Marlborough.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. They had gloves to matching and hats. And they had feathers and shiny.
And I really like their style as a brass band that's based in, one of New Zealand's premier wine regions to come across to one of Australia's premier wine regions to do a contest and spend a few days and then go back again. I think they're doing life all right.
Yeah. That was good. It's always good to have our Kiwi friends over, isn't it?
It is. Oh, and Robin, you're coming to New Zealand Nationals, Robin? I keep on asking and you keep saying,
No, I told you I have children. They can come too.
They can come too.
I am seriously considering it. So
good.
The world will speak to your people. I think it's a goer. So, yeah, watch this space.
We want to have lots of crossover between Australia and New Zealand banding. Yeah. Whatever we can do to make that happen. It's a good thing. Super fun.
The free trade agreement. All right. Should we ask Edward? I'll ask you some brass band cast questions, Adrian, now.
Okay.
Are you ready? As if I haven't been asking you random enough questions already, as it is.
I feel like I've been talking way too much, but anyway.
No, not at all. Not at all. Voice of the people. Voice of the people.
Yeah, Tim's sick, so he can't talk so much. Well, you are talking a bit, aren't you? I said, Tim, you could just smile and let me do the talking, but he cannot do that, can you? Even with your sore voice. Okay, Adrian, this is still my favorite question provided by Jared McCunney. Have you got anything in your house that maybe might belong to your band or maybe the NCBCA? Like a stolen thing. Yeah. Time to come clean.
Something illicit. Well, I mean, I'm a corner player, so there is always an array of mutes. I can't say I've ever bought a mute, so they clearly don't belong to me. But one does collect things.
Band's fault for not engraving them. Band's fault. As soon as you buy them, you engrave them, right? If there's no name, it's open, right?
Yeah. So there is a plethora of mutes in a bag from a variety of bands over the years, and a mute stand as well. And I must say, and this is my claim to fame, in my 40 years, I've never bought a bottle of valve oil.
I had to buy one last year. It was very
funny. One just miraculously appears when it's required, and no, it doesn't appear to be anyone's, and I'll have that.
Doesn't appear to be anyone, so now it's mine.
Mine now. So
look at these mutes. They don't seem to be anyone's now. They're mine.
Yes, I am a thief of valve oil. So, but over the years, I mean, goodness, there's been all kinds of trophies that aren't mine, would have been looking after the silverware. Because, you run a contest and then the trophies that don't get claimed, they have to go somewhere. And that happens at a mantelpiece too. So they end up, in bedrooms and on mantelpieces and things, tucked away, ready for the next nationals. So, lots and lots
that
of
you will stuff, take back one day, right? You'll take it off.
Yeah. Oh, it all goes back. It's kind of, I have a 40-year arrangement whereby everything will go back, like the wardrobe full of uniforms and that everybody has,
Amazing. Love it. All right. Adrian, what is your favourite instrument, but you can't say the one you currently play?
Okay. I am probably the world's most frustrated air guitarist. What I wouldn't give to play guitar, but I fail miserably, absolutely miserable at it. It just does not make sense to me. But my, I am a sad, frustrated guitarist on the inside. Oh. And a sad, frustrated left-handed guitarist for some reason.
Can't even play power chord.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you air guitar frequently?
Not as frequent as I used to, but when the mood strikes, I will solo away, big time.
Very nice. I think more of that. I think that can be encouraged all around. Air guitar.
Yes.
Love it.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be my mission for the next week or so is to air guitar.
It's time. It's time for the national air guitar championships. I think.
That is a pre-results entertainment.
Yeah.
That is huge. This is a big concept. I think that's just been unearthed. Every band can put forward their best air guitarist.
Yes.
On stage, and everyone's got an air guitar too. What song would their air guitar to?
Bohemian Rhapsody. No?
There's a bit of a single.
Fantana. Yeah. Isn't it like... it's a brass band version? No. Should we sing that at the end? That could be an outro. Oh, Bohemian
That's
Rhapsody.
A wonderful, right. Wonderful answer.
Yeah, congratulations on your answer and winning for not answer. Picking bassoon or bagpipes. I think maybe Adrian does listen to our podcast though, so he maybe knew some of the answers. He pre-thought about his answers to give good answers.
I had a pretty fair idea where what questions Mike had asked you. I'm pre-warned.
Have you thought of one for falling over? No one can think of this on the spot. Has anything ever? What is the biggest thing that's fallen over? Or have you ever fallen off while reading the scores? Or has your microphone fallen?
No. Probably the biggest, most spectacular pratfall, if you like, that ever happened in a concert. No, it wasn't a concert. It was a contest. It was a back row corner player. And I won't mention the band or the player for obvious reasons, but they'd gone to do the mute change and they put
and
in the
someone had stolen course. Their mute.
Well, yeah.
Different story.
And then after I gave it back. But they were doing the mute change and they did the little fumble, and it's like on the tips of the fingers.
And they're just catching it,
And it's like catching it, moving further and further forward into the stand until they fell through the stand, landing in the tenor horn section. So it was pretty spectacular. No one was injured, only a lot of pride. Nothing was dented. But it was spectacular because it involved chairs falling over, music stands, and then the inevitable sight of the mute rolling towards the UFO section. So it was very spec. Does that count?
Amazing.
Definitely counts. These are killer answers.
Because I could really visualize that almost as much as the tubular bells falling off the riser that Jamie was telling us about with the locks not on. Amazing. Awesome. All right. So what have we got on for the week? Or what's coming up? What's next? What's next for you, Adrian?
We've kind of just a lot of working, unfortunately. There's still a little bit of post nationals mopping up and putting some stuff on the website and whatnot, which is always good fun. But no, nothing terribly exciting on the horizon, short of a trip to New Zealand, Tim. I mean,
yes. New Zealand, let's go.
I think we should do this. I can, I can get on that bandwagon.
That band awesome playing, we'll get over there and we'll
yeah.
a bit of a chat about how New Zealand Let's bands are coming to Australia more, Australian bands going across to New Zealand more. It's going to be great. Maybe we can get a bilateral banding agreement.
Yeah. Tim, do you think we should put throw out the challenge, who else would like to join us? Do we get a posse,
Who wants to come on Australia, a trip? Who wants to come on a trip Australia to New Zealand with us?
Who wants to go? Not to play, just to have fun.
Robin wants to come.
I don't want to come. New Zealand's really cold. No, I do like New Zealand. I like the Hobbits and that vampire show. I like that.
What else do you like about New Zealand, Robin? The lovely people. Do you like the lovely people?
I do like the lovely people. Do they have good the wind answer. Bands in their nationals?
No, but they've got the National Concert Band Association of New Zealand has their festival in the first weekend of August, which you can see sometimes live streamed on Brass Band.
So they're separate over there.
They're separate, and it's a very different wind band scene in New Zealand. Not yet as strong as the Brass Band scene.
We're more together. I always love giving a shout out to our wind band friends.
Definitely.
The Robin, bassoons and the flute.
What's coming up for you, Robin?
Oh, well, I already said the other day.
Say it again. It's 2 days later. Nah.
Just hanging around. Lady Band. I still haven't practiced. I told you I would, but I didn't. Sorry, Marissa, if you're listening. Yeah, that's about it. And just getting back in, got to pick some repertoire for states.
Got to pick some fun songs.
Win that clock.
Yeah, I think our band has got to work on hymns. I've decided we've got to get our hymns good. I might get one of the Salvos guys to come in and run a rehearsal.
I would love to hear someone play a hymn medley, like 8 bars of this, just like a hymn medley. Like I just want.
That hymn.
Because it's all
They've all got one line, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you, especially if you've got 80s drum kit, shout out to Western Brass. And then you just modulate up a semitone into the next one. It'd be pretty.
That would be amazing. Let's tell Jared.
I think maybe I'm sicker than I thought I was, everyone. Sorry.
Yeah.
It'd be easy. You just get the red book and play through them and then tell the band to put it up a semitone each time with a drum beat. Could be done.
Ooh.
Interesting.
I don't know. It must be getting too late. Our ideas are getting terrible. But, yeah, so there's that. How about you, Tim? You're doing more resting?
Oh, well, I meant to. I've got too much work, so I work too much today. The Footscray Band, Footscray Yarraville City Band, is celebrating its 150th this year.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a very big concert at the Melbourne Recital Centre, which is going to be booked out for a brass band only concert, which is pretty exciting. And tickets are on sale and all that. But apparently I'm on the subcommittee to help organise it. And I have been for a while, but I haven't been to any meetings. But there's a meeting tomorrow night, so I'm probably going to go to that to try and organise stuff.
Are you going to have a cake and blow out 150 candles? You should do that. Suggest that as an idea. Because Boroondara is having – this sounds like we're such babies. We're having our 25th anniversary next year. Yay, 25. Everyone's like, my band's been running for 200,000 years or something. I don't know. We're 25, but there's still people in the band who have been in it from the start. So that's saying something cool, isn't it? 25. What was your band age? Was that 100 and something?
What was your
20? Latrobe, the Mighty Latrobe Federal, will be 150 next year. Yes, about this
time. Also, same as Footscray.
Oh. No, Footscray's this year. We were 69.
Oh, okay.
1869.
Oh, okay.
1870? No, that's not 150.
Maybe it's last year. I don't know. We found an article in Trove saying that we were 1869, and it's on the website, so it must be real.
But I'm just saying it was a similar time. You were established as the Latrobe Federal Band then. Isn't that an interesting tidbit?
Go Bandies.
Yay. Oh, what a way to finish. All right. Well, we need a closing song, don't we?
Oh, I've got a suggestion.
Adrian, what's your favourite?
A suggestion.
It would be totally
You're
remiss.
The Dragon? No.
We have to do my all-time fave, and in fact it's the piece where by my late wife had the moment where she crossed over into the dark side and thought, I really like brass bands. And that was at the 2000 Nationals in Launceston. We were watching Q, and it was the mighty Mark Ford, Kung Fu Panda himself, there
yes,
he was.
Yes, yes.
And they launched into Devil in the Deep Blue Sea. And that was just that moment where it was like, wow, this is the best thing ever. So I think that, you know, we should totally do the fast bit, you know.
The fast bit. Okay.
Fast bit of Devil and Deep VC.
Do you know this, Robin, or do you want okay. Adrian to hum a bit of it first?
I think no? You need to hum it first. I've never actually played it.
Oh, really? It's
band's only
awesome.
25 years old.
Okay. Okay, so you've got the
yeah.
you got a two-bar introduction. Mm-hmm.
It was in Perth. It was Perth, was it? Perth test piece?
Yeah, it was It's probably the only time I've sat there and listened to every A-grade band because, you know, I heard all of the tests and because it's just my absolute favourite piece.
Yep.
But I must say, Extreme Makeover is up there too. So, you know.
Oh, I do like, yeah, I've played Extreme Makeover and that's just like. All I remember is those like notes. And the tooting with the bottles.
And the tooting.
I remember the tooting with the bottles. Yeah.
Double and Deep Blue Sea. That great piece of music.
All awesome right. piece. But does that singing count as the singing?
Oh, we're finished
or do
now.
Do you need to do it again?
Do we want to do it again?
Yeah.
Do you want to do it again?
No, no, okay. I think that was fine. Oh, okay. Ready? Go. Go. Bye.
Bye, Robin. Bye, Adrian.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.